Your names?
I'm Maria Urbano, special educator.
Charisse Cabrera, I'm a pre-K teacher.
What brings you guys out to the Save Our Schools March today?
We're basically here to support the cause. We would like to really have the government rethink how the budget is spent and how, you know, teachers really need the support of government. And also, we want to elevate the cost that we have right now, which is we're in dire need of support because we're international teachers who are being affected by the recent Department of Labor determination that of PGCPS being a willful violator.
Prince George's County Public Schools.
Yes, Prince George's County Public Schools has been determined to be a willful violator for not paying the fees in processing our paperwork to come over here and work in the U.S.
Charisse, you and Maria are one of more than 1,000 teachers who were brought into Prince George's County from overseas. You're both from the Philippines. Tomorrow, your situation... tomorrow, your situation changes, and your H-1B visa expires. Talk about how you came here and what you're going through.
Well, I came here on an H-1B visa, and I was given an initial of 3 years. And based on that H-1B program, a person can come to the United States and work legally under that H-1B program for a maximum of 6 years. So when I was given an initial of 3 years, that gives me an option of, in the school system, to extend my visa for another 3 years, hopefully, if USCIS grants it. So I still have like 3 years under that program. But because of the recent determination from DOL, the extension will never be, it's not going to happen. There's not going to be no fruition of that. So what I'm resorting to do now is to save my status. And like what I mentioned earlier, I tried to work on a student's visa because they said it's safer and it's more permanent compared to a tourist visa. But things didn't, I tried to work things out. I got the support from a cousin of mine. Unfortunately, the school that I was eyeing to enroll at said they couldn't grant me one because I am a teacher and I speak good English, they said. And if I needed to get into, or if I need to change into a student's visa, student status, I have to be enrolled in college, but I don't have the luxury of time. And I wasn't informed until Wednesday, that's like the 27th of July, and that leaves me with a few days left. So I had to go find a lawyer. I got one from Teachers Council, and with their help and their assistance, I was able to make arrangements or, you know, fill up the application form for a tourist visa application. But there are risks with it. Like I mentioned, there's a big risk that it's not going to be approved for USCIS. But I'm just counting on the fact that it has been submitted, the papers have been submitted, and like what immigration law says, that if there's a pending petition for you, an application of some sort, whether it be a tourist, an H-1B extension, or a student's visa, and it's being that petition or that papers were submitted prior to the expiration date of your visa or your I-94, then you're still good. You're still in status.
Maria Urbano, can you talk about the recruitment effort to bring teachers from the Philippines to Prince George's County?
Yes. They started last 2004, if I'm not mistaken. They did some hiring junkets back home in the Philippines. They specifically went there to actively hire us. And so because of that, we felt that we were really in dire need and there's greener pasture out here in the U.S. because, you know, they just needed these highly skilled teachers in specific areas like special education, science and math and English as a second language. So they really were there to pursue us. And then we came over here in batches, like one year after the other. There was a specific cohort that came over here and, you know, and had and transitioned their families. Most of them sold their properties and houses and cars. And so them being uprooted and then finding out that, you know, next week you're not going to have a job is like a death sentence. They don't know, you know, where they're going back to and how to pick up the pieces. So it's really very devastating. And even if I'm not, you know, urgently affected like a lot of them, I still feel terribly upset and devastated, as if it were me, that it's happening to me. And I can't just sit back and say, hey, this is happening to them. That's why I'm so active in advocating for the cause of all the Filipino teachers, all the international teachers who are involved and affected in this DOL determination. We feel that it's double victimization, because we're the ones who suffered from having to pay for a lot of the fees involved, and then we have to suffer another time for losing our jobs and losing our status in the U.S. And so it's really hard. It's a we're stuck in the middle of all these government mandates and institutions that try to protect each other. They try to protect each other, but they, like in the case of PGCPS, they should have the responsibility in taking care of us, because they were the ones who uprooted us in the first place. They should be the ones, like yesterday we had a forum that detailed what they have to do in the case that they have to do a short selling of their properties, of their cars. We had to do that. We had to initiate that for the group. But in my opinion, it should have been PGCPS who did all these things, who paved the way for transition to happen. They didn't even give us, you know, sufficient notification. We can't file for unemployment over here because of our status. So we're left with nothing. We're at the mercy of the powers that be. And it's really unfair. It's really unjust. And we're just lucky that we have supporters out there who are, you know, who keep our spirits going, because it's a really tough fight we're fighting right now. And the way that it's going, it's really a tough journey. And we're just doing the best that we can on a day-to-day basis. So we're really thankful, like in your case, you're covering us, and it helps. Every little bit helps in advocating for our cause.
If I may add, what actually another thing that also hurts me and a lot of international teachers with this thing is that we have been victimized twice, but a lot of people, because they're not informed or they probably are misinformed, they still regard us the culprit. Mm-hmm. We are now the ones who are facing with the fact that we are going to be unemployed, the stress and anxiety of being out of status, and people still blame us for it. Like other teachers would say, oh, that's why the school system doesn't have money, because a lot of them are going back to you. And then without them realizing that, you know, that 4.2 million that's being highlighted on and on for the past days or weeks or months, you know, what's going, we're not, you know, we're losing more than what will be given back to us. We're losing our jobs, we're losing our future. They think that we robbed them off of their jobs, but we didn't. I don't think USCIS would give us the, would approve the H-1B petition if they see that we are displacing American laborers. But because they see that they could, you know, they simply could not fill those positions, that's why they approved us. So that's just what hurts me, and that's just disappoints me and angers me sometimes, because people just, you know, instead of giving us sympathy, they're the ones who are against us because they think that we are stealing from them. No, it's actually, we are being robbed off of an opportunity to develop in a personal level, to grow personally, professionally, and for, especially for married people, you know, to give, they are being robbed off of an opportunity for them to give their children a better future here in America. So that's really this very frustrating there.
How is this going to affect the students? Now the teachers, like yourself, have several years of experience. I know those first years of teaching are the most difficult, and you really kind of get your feet on the ground after 2-3 years, and you have experienced teachers who are going to be let go in the hundreds. What's the impact do you think this will have on students?
Well, I think through the years, the children have kind of built a bond with the teachers, and even if they don't stay with the same teacher for the next year, but the fact they see that that teacher in the hallways, you know, when they find out that they won't be able to see that teacher next year, I think it will have an effect on them emotionally, because even if we are teachers, we also give them something not outside the lesson base or outside academics, because like us Filipinos, we know that we give more than what is being asked of us. Like, we're not just doing the job and just teaching and that's it. We also give them our love, we give them the attention, we give them the, we treat them right. Yeah, that's just how we are. And when they know that, you know, that teacher that they've been attached to in one way or another is gone, that's going to have an impact on them. And then for those students probably who will have the same, who are used, you know, for a kind of looping thing that they stay with the same teacher for like a couple of years or so, when they realize that teacher is not going to be there, it's going to be a major adjustment. Now, what a lot of people don't understand is that when a child undergoes a certain kind of adjustment, learning is going to be challenged in the sense that it will hinder the pace of learning. So it all also boils down to the children being affected indirectly with this issue that we are facing right now.
Let me just add, last school year was already challenging. In my particular school, it's already been a challenge to work, considering we already were starting to do lunch monitor duties when in the past we didn't. So most everyone had to pitch in that regard. We already felt how bad it was with the limited staffing. And even in our school, the one specialist had to take on 3 roles. And given that we were still supposed to meet the annual yearly progress, the AYP, you know, it's going to be hard. Because this school year, not only will there be a reduction in force happening, that means there will be a higher student-teacher ratio, but also the quality of education will be hampered, because the teachers who are going to be left behind are no longer as dedicated as we are. We're not saying that the locals are not, you know, dedicated teachers, but we're just saying it's in our nature and it's in our culture to treat the students like our own. It's as if they're our very own flesh and blood. Back home, it's as if they're our sisters or our children. And so whatever it takes to make the, you know, to do the job, whether it be doing the paperwork for our special ed students and whether it be teaching them in our resource rooms, we do our very best. I would stay at work 8, 9, 10 p.m. The custodians can attest to that. And that is why I haven't been able to complete my master's degree, right away. Had I been focused on just finishing my master's degree right away when I came here, then I would have had my visa expedited. Because if you have a master's degree, then your visa gets expedited. But because I was more concerned at that time in trying to make sure that the students get their education, the best instruction that I could possibly give them, and that I could make sure that all the paperwork were done in a timely manner because of all the deadlines and government mandates that we had to comply with. So I did that to the best of my ability, and that's why if you see countywide, there's a whole lot of Filipinos in special education, for instance, who are chairpersons. I'm also one of the chairpersons for special education, and the reason for that is because we do the extra mile. We put in all the hours and all the care and everything. We put our 101 and even more in our job, and we don't even consider it as a job. At the end of the day, it's like more of a mission for us. And so now they don't feel it because school's out. But when school's back in session with a high student-teacher ratio and a substantive number of Filipino teachers that will be out of the system, parents will soon feel it. They will be clamoring for better quality, more teachers. They will really feel it. The students will feel it. And the performance across the county will not be as good. And now it's like we're faced with this battle, and it's like a lost cause because we're in this place where, you know, because of the prevailing anti-immigrant sentiment and this budget shortfall across the country, priority would not be on us. But considering eventually people will know and feel the effect of this ruling, and so it's just sad for the kids. It's just sad for all these families that are going to be affected. We think there's a better way, and this is not it. And we hope the Department of Labor would rethink its position, or the USCIS would find a way to help transition where the teachers are at, and find a middle ground so that, you know, everyone will still be supported. We understand there's a budget crisis in the county, and there's a reduction in force that is in place, but we feel that we shouldn't be the scapegoats. We shouldn't be the ones suffering. We shouldn't be the victims here. The students shouldn't be the victims here. You know, they should rethink things, because in the future they're setting things up in such a way that this will be a bad precedent for all the other future migrant workers. If in the future they would need migrant workers like us again, they will really have a hard time, because our government will make sure that all, you know, the security and measures are in place so that we won't be victimized again. Because this is not a very good precedence at all.
Can you take us back to the Philippines and the recruitment effort to bring teachers over here? My understanding is that it wasn't just Arrowhead, which was the contractor who was used, the recruitment agency, but in fact, officials from Prince George's County came all the way to the Philippines to recruit teachers.
Yes, I remember that, you know, I started with an orientation, and then they said after the orientation, if you're interested to join the agency and be part of their active list, then I have to go through an initial interview. It's basically that interview is just for the person who's representing the agency to see if you speak good English. And then after that initial interview, they will submit the resume to the agency, and then the agency will get in touch with you. So once the agency gets in touch with you, then you pay a certain fee, so that you will be a registration fee, that's what they call it, with the agency, so that you will be part of their active list. And then after that, I communicated with the with people from the agency through email with regards to the exams that I have to take, which is Praxis. That's the exam that I have to pass for me to be able to get certified, because that's also one of the requirements. And then I made schedules, I took the exam, and then sometime September, I got an email saying that there will be an interview in October of 2000. That all happened in 2007. An interview, and I was scheduled for the 14th, I think that was a Sunday, of 2007. So when I went there, I know that there were a lot of people from the county, or there are people that represents the county. I don't know how involved they are or what their actual place is as far in the recruitment or in the human resources department of the county is, but I know that they were there to interview people, to interview teachers, I mean, for different positions, be it special ed, there's English, and then there's science and math, and then there's English as secondary language, and there's even one for elementary and for early childhood. In fact, that interview process is not actually an easy one, because we were asked, each teacher was given a certain time, and we were asked to go an hour before your scheduled time. When we got there, they asked us to pick a question from a bowl, and you're given an hour to answer that question in an essay form. And then after that, you submit, and you, when it's your time for the interview, you give that to the interviewer, and then the interviewer would go over your essay and ask you questions about it, and then the interviewer also would look at your resume, and you know the usual interview process. And then after that, because it on the second day, the last day of the interview process, the agency released an email jotting down the names of those who passed the interview. I know during that time, not all who were scheduled to do the interview passed it. But then after that, they said that the next instruction was, okay, we will come out with a list of deployment sometime soon. January came, there was nothing. But that was also the time that they said, okay, we are going to have an information session. This is going to be by diversity seminar. In fact, Dr. Height was there.
This is William Height, the head of the Prince George's County School, superintendent.
At that time, he wasn't the superintendent yet, then. But he was there, and he was one of the speakers, among others. And, you know, it was a diversity seminar wherein they just exposed us, and they showed videos, you know, of how it is to teach in America.
And this is in the Philippines, what, in Manila?
In Manila. And because I don't live in Manila, I had to fly to Manila. So I had to, like when I had to do the interview, I had to fly, I had to pay for my hotel, and then I flew again to Manila for that diversity seminar. And then they said that, okay, the list of deployment still isn't out because there are still other teachers who, we're still waiting for the results for the Praxis, because the agency's rule is that if you don't pass the Praxis, that means you don't certify, then they will not, you know, put you on the list for deployment. They're not going to hire you. So it was, Arrowhead at that time was really very particular that you have to be certified and qualified for you to be hired. And then March came, and that's when the list of deployment came out, and that's when they said, okay, it's time for us to have a reorientation again. This time, fees were being talked about. So they gave us a time schedule of how much money we're going to pay and when is the deadline for that. And then June, I remember that was the time wherein I treated Manila like it was the mall. I would take the first flight out of Cebu to fly to Manila, and that's like 4 o'clock in the morning. And then get to Arrowhead and spend the entire day there for a series of seminar on a Saturday, because we couldn't come on weekdays because we have work. So we would fly to Cebu, to Manila, and when the seminar is over, we take the last flight out and go back home. And then I have just another weekend of rest, and the following weekend again, I have to fly back again to Manila for another kind of seminar and come back again and take the last flight back to Cebu. Because if we spend the night, that's going to be an additional expense on our part because we don't live in Manila. So we don't have a house there. Although there are relatives, but then it would be inconvenient because, you know, Manila is a different kind of place. You know, some places are far, and traffic is also bad and all. And we're also trying to watch out for the cost of plane fare. So I remember, you know, going back and forth like three times to Manila during that month of June. And then the fourth one was when I flew to Manila for an interview in July and got the visa. And I arrived here in America, August, first week of August, 2008.
Do you recall at all any of what Dr. Height's questions or comments were?
To be honest, now this is going to be embarrassing. No, because he spoke at the time when I was sleepy. I took the first flight out, so that's like... So when he spoke, I couldn't remember anything. I have to be honest, okay? I can't just make up something.
I want to get your response to U.S. Secretary of Labor Hilda Solis's comments about the Labor Department's, I guess, agreement with Prince George's County Public Schools. Quote, the Labor Department has the responsibility for ensuring that employers who use the H-1B program follow the law and do not place U.S. workers at a disadvantage to H-1B workers. Solis continues, we are pleased this investigation has been resolved with workers paid all the back wages to which they are entitled, end quote. So Solis is pleased that this matter has been resolved, the back wages being the fees that you paid in order to come to the U.S. In fact, the employer is supposed to pay that. And so in her eyes, things are resolved. In your eyes, where do things stand? And as well, let me get any final thoughts that you have.
First of all, we were never included in any of the talks prior to the time when they were appealing. So the investigation was going on for 4 years. And during that time, from what I know, there hasn't been any effort on the part of PGCPS or the Department of Labor to include us in the talks. We never knew that there was such an investigation going on. And last year, the PGCPS even surveyed us about the fees that we paid for this effort, for this program.
And how much were they, by the way?
It varies, but the investment per person, the investment that we have had, including the airfare and all that, would amount to about $10,000 or more. The fees probably, I don't know if it's $5,000, I don't know.
When you say fees?
If it's just for the U.S., I'm not sure if it's about $3,000 or... It's broken down into very tiny segments. So, but basically, we paid 10 something more, 10 to 15,000.
During our time, because we were like one of the last batch from Arrowhead that came. We spent more than that. I mean, if we total it, I mentioned earlier, it was like around 12,000. But then, if I add on the practice exams, plane fares, and mm-hmm. all the others. We actually reached up to an amount of 15,000. I remember the first amount that we were asked to pay was around $4,000, and that was for the visa, for the lawyer's fee, for the premium processing, and a 1,000 initial payment for the placement fee, that's the fee of the agency.
And so when you look at it, the premium processing fee, of course, the U.S. government, you know, they don't have to pay that, but it is something that we had to pay, and they won't have to give that back to us. So in that computation of 4.5 million, it's really the most conservative estimate. And from what I know, it's going to be a very measly amount. I don't know how much exactly that's going to boil down per person, but I heard it's like some people will even get like $700. Maximum, I don't know how much that would be. But even if it's 4,000 or 5,000, it's not enough to compensate for all the investment that we have, you know, put in this, in terms of time, money, energy, and in terms of all the time, energy, and money spent by our families as well.
I have a question for you. Have you ever experienced it, how it is to relocate from maybe from another state, or are you really from here?
From D.C.
From Washington, D.C. Did you live here and grow up here?
No, I'm from Westchester, New York.
So are you based there right now?
No, I live here.
So you know how it is. So do you think relocating is an easy thing to do?
No, it was not easy to move from state to state, so I can't imagine how difficult it would be to move halfway across the world.
See, that's the thing. We moved halfway across the world, literally halfway across the world. Like right now, it's 3:13 in the afternoon in the Philippines, it's 3:13 in the morning. So if it's not easy to relocate from another state, from one state to another, can you imagine how much harder it was for us to move halfway across the world? And we are actually being limited to the things that we can bring, which is like two luggages.
And also, when you think about it, over here at least you still have some support system somehow. You know, you even if you relocate to another place, you may know of a relative or a friend or whatever who would kind of give you a roof over your head should there be a need. Unlike in our case, you know, I don't have an immediate relative over here. So if I lose my job, I'd be homeless. And so this is the scenario. A lot of people would think that losing a job in America is just a common thing, and we should just suck it up. But that's not the case. It's not that easy for us. We had to build our credit. We had to, from no credit card, nobody wanted to get us, you know, to give us their credit cards because they didn't know us from Adam, to finally getting, you know, all these offers for credit cards. You know, we had to build our way up to be able to buy our cars, to buy our houses. We had to do it the hard way. And for us to be losing everything we worked hard at and we worked hard for, and even when we were doing a very good job, we always had good evaluations. And like in my case, my principal, you know, she always depended on me. We're always dependable people. We're responsible people. That's her nature. And so this is really her statement about that this has been a very successful thing, because the determination, we haven't been paid yet. And whatever they pay is a pittance compared to whatever we've invested to come over here. It's a pittance. And we'd rather keep our jobs, we'd rather keep our status, than have what, $5,000 or $700, depending on whether you're lucky or not. It's a big joke. And so we should have, and PGCPS.
Jesse Turner's in the vanguard. Jesse Turner's on the mic.
The Save Our Schools rally, which started from here, is now returning to here. So that's the sound in the background. They've gone to the White House and back. But finish your thoughts, Maria.
Yeah. Where was I?
Well, I had one final thought. Charisse Cabrera, Maria mentioned that, you know, we are dependable people. But I'm wondering now if you have any final thoughts, but also if you feel not so much like dependable people, but more like disposable people as far as how you've been treated.
Oh, yes. We feel like after we've done our job and say, okay, we made use of you. Okay, it's time for us to dump you. And the debarment thing is just an excuse for them to get rid of us. That's just my opinion. That's just how I feel. Because when I think when the Secretary Solis says that, you know, the issue has been resolved, and I was just thinking, America is so big on freedom and justice. But in our situation, where is justice? We've been victimized twice, and a lot of people still think that we are also culprits because we stole something from them. We are the... That's just how I feel right now. It's hard.
Thank you guys so much.